ஓம் வசுதேவசுதம் தேவம் கம்சசாணூரமர்தனம் தேவகீ பரமானந்தம் கிருஷ்ணம் வந்தே ஜகத்குரும். சர்வோபனிஷதோ காவோ தோக்தா கோபாலநந்தனஃ பார்த்தோ வத்ஸஃ சுதீர்போக்தா துக்தம் கீதாமிருதம் மஹத். மூகம் கரோதி வாசாலம் பங்கும் லங்கயதே கிரிம். யத் கிருபா தமஹம் வந்தே பரமானந்த மாதவம். We have started the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, which is called the Daiva Asura Sampat Vibhaga Yoga, a division between the characteristics, qualities of those who are born with a spiritual nature as well as with a worldly nature. Shankaracharya, the master that he was, brings out in his Sambandha Bhashya. Sambandha means introduction, what is the relation between past chapters, especially the previous chapter. But sometimes he also brings out what has been mentioned very briefly in the past chapters. In this 16th chapter, in his introductory bhashya commentary, he brings the 9th chapter, where people have been divided into 3 categories. So now and then I will be inserting Shankaracharya's Bhashya, which not only lends wonderful spice to our understanding, but very deeply meaningful and also inspiring. So here goes, Shankaracharya is telling, Daivi Asuri Rakshasi Iti Praninam Prakrutayaha Navame Adhyaye Suchitaha. The divine, the fiendish, and the demonical natures of creatures were referred to in the 9th chapter. Very interesting. Here, when we look at the title of the chapter, Daiva and Asura, divine as well as demonic. But Shankaracharya divides the demonic people into 2 categories. Simply put, what, who are they? One is called Asuri, another is called Rakshasi. Asuri people, there's a very interesting derivation in Sanskrit. Who is an Asura? Asu means prana. Prana means sense organs. He who is completely devoted only to the enjoyment of bodily happiness and a bit of mental happiness. These people, they are called demonic. They are called demonic because they are not spiritual. But they are not harmful also. They are people who are selfish, who do not wish to harm other people, excepting a little bit of mild cheating, etc. They are highly aware. This is a society where we have to live and let live. But they are not interested in higher ideals at all. These are devoted, good people, but worldly and very sensual type of people, material people. But the other one, Rakshasi, that Rakshasa, the very derivation is from whom one wants to get protected. Such a person is called a Rakshasa. He is worse than this Asura because they go to any length to harm, to criticize people. That's what Shankara is telling, Daivi, Asuri, Rakshasi. These are the 3 categories. Praninam Prakrutayaha, the natures of jivas. Even among animals also, you will see some dogs, extremely faithful and good. Some dogs, they only, if they are frightened or if they come to know that someone is harming, then they will attack. But there are some mad dogs. They will be attacking everybody and anybody without any reason. Maybe rabid dogs, we don't know. So among human beings, even today you can see that there are people who not only are completely gone to dogs, as we call, but they will not allow others also to be at peace. They want to rule and they want to impose what they think is to think. And even among the Rakshasi people, I make another category. This is a second type of Rakshasi. What is it? They do everything in the name of religion. They kill in the name of religion. They oppress, suppress, and you open your eyes, you will see everywhere these kind of people are there, not only in the East, but in the West also. So this is what Shankaracharya's beautiful introduction. We have to, what is the purpose? So we will have to know, am I a second type of Rakshasa? Am I first type of Rakshasa? Am I having this demonic nature, selfish, sense-bound, but not at all paying attention to higher things? Or am I born with that quality, where I am in a way in the world, but what I am seeking is nothing less than God, spiritual life, etc. So Shankaracharya says, Tasam Vistarena Pradarshanaya Avayam Sattvasham Shuddhi Ityadi Adhyaya Arabhyate. In order to present them elaborately, this chapter, opening with fearlessness, purity of the mind, etc., is begun. Tatra Samsara Mokshaya Devi Prakruti. Why is this chapter started? Among them, the divine nature leads to liberation from worldly existence. So whoever wants spiritual progress and ultimate liberation from all sorts of limitations. Remember, body means limitation, mind also means limitation. But those who are Asuri and Rakshasi, Nibandhaya, they are, according to their natures, bound, completely bound, very much bound. What does it mean? It means for the first category, it takes quite some time. For the second category, it takes a long, long time. But for the third category, not only it takes a very long time, but they also suffer as a result of their actions. So hence, the divine nature is being presented so that it may be accepted and the other two slowly are overcome. So in our last class, I have chanted these three verses, verses 1, 2 and 3. In three verses, the Lord catalogues all the spiritual qualities that a spiritual aspirant must possess, without which he will not be able to make any progress in spiritual life. If we want to know any, make any progress in any field of life, first we must be very clear about our goal, about our path. Third, we must walk the path. And that is why in the 12th, 13th and 14th chapters, 12th chapter is called Bhakti Yoga, 13th chapter is called Prakriti Purusha Vibhaga Yoga, Kshetra Kshetragna Vibhaga Yoga. 14th chapter is called Gunatraya Vibhaga Yoga. All this theoretical knowledge is given to us, explaining, elaborating the goal we have to reach. But theoretical knowledge about our goal is fine, knowing about the path is fine, but now walking the path is very much necessary. And that is going to be elaborated in the 16th, 17th, and a little beginning of the 18th. 18th chapter usually is called the summarization of all the 17 chapters. Why do I call 17 chapters? Because the real teaching of Bhagavad Gita starts only with the 11th verse of the second chapter. So, some people like Madhusudana Saraswati go to the extent of saying the real Gita is over with the 15th chapter. It is as it were the 15 chapters Bhagavad Gita's teaching is complete. 16th and 17th are the roof to contain, and 18th chapter is the very pinnacle. It is a poetical way of describing, but let us not forget, every chapter contains the essence of every other chapter practically. Some chapters, some points are highlighted. In other chapters, other points are highlighted. So, let me repeat the first one. Sri Bhagavan Vacha. The Lord is commencing to teach Arjuna, which means all of us, Abhayam Sattva Samshuddhi, Jnana Yoga Vyavasthiti, Dhanam Dhamascha Yajnascha, Swadhyaya Tapa Arjavam. So, here, fearlessness, etc., certain qualities are going to be elaborated. All the three verses together, about 26 verses are there. In this first verse, we have got, I think, around 9 qualities are there. So, I will first read the translation and then one by one, we will discuss it. As I mentioned earlier, I have written some editorials and this book is available, Be Divine Here and Nine, Here and Now, and that book is nothing but a little bit elaboration of these 26 qualities. So, those who are interested, they can, I think, download it from our srisharada.com website. So, Abhayam, what are the 9 qualities? Abhayam, fearlessness. Sattva Samshuddhi, purity of heart. Jnana, yoga, vyavasthiti. Knowledge, theory, philosophy along with practice. Dhanam, charity, caring and sharing. Damaha, control of the our external sense organs, body, and dealing with the world appropriately. Yajnaha, converting the whole life into a sacrifice, that is equivalent of surrendering oneself to God, that is, I belong to you, my ego also belongs to you, everything I possess belongs only to you. Swadhyaya, study of the scriptures is one meaning, but study of the scriptures appropriate, I will elaborate it, that is the first meaning, study of the scriptures, but second meaning is study of oneself, one's mind, whether I am doing what I profess to do. Tapaha, some amount of austerity is very necessary. Then arjava, straightforwardness, no crookedness. These qualities we will discuss a little bit in detail, not too much detail. And you can meditate upon each of these qualities so that you will understand what is the most important thing and how you can put them also into practice. The Lord said, fearlessness, purity of heart, steadfastness in knowledge and yoga, charity, self-control and sacrifice, study of the scriptures, austerity and uprightness. So, let us take up one by one. Abhayam, fearlessness. Bhaya means fear. Abhaya means fearlessness. Fearlessness is one of the very first qualities Sri Krishna advises every spiritual aspirant to cultivate. Why? Fear is, what is the real root cause of fear? Fear is really stems from ignorance. Fear is the result of selfishness. And the cause of selfishness is ignorance about the real nature of man. Fear, always fear comes from selfishness. What is selfishness? Everything must belong to me. I only must become possessed. Here also there are two varieties. One variety is, I want to be selfish. But let others also be selfish in their own way, live and let live. But the other one, only I want to possess, nobody else has the right authority to become selfish. Everybody must become selfless and they all must devote themselves for my welfare. This is the worst kind of so-called selfish people. And there are so many shades are there, but we will only deal with them briefly. So, fear. We are all living a life of fear. From birth to death, it is fear. When a baby is born, cries out of fear. And when the same baby becomes old baby, and when it is about to die, again it feels like crying. Sometimes it can, sometimes it cannot. But mentally, oh, I am going to lose everything. I don't know what is going to be my fate. Why this fear comes? Selfishness. And of all the manifestations of selfishness, the greatest, strongest, intensest selfishness is fear of death. All of us are subject to various types of fear. Fear of old age, fear of disease, fear of death, and not to speak of the changing circumstances, fear of cold, fear of heat, fear of losing, fear of gaining. You may be surprised. Do people fear if they are supposed to gain something? Yes, change of place. People fear. What am I going to encounter there? Will I be appear or not? That's why many people say a known devil is better than unknown devil. Then fear of so many things, future, fear of past, regret is nothing but another form of fear. Why did I do it? I was a stupid fellow. I should not have done that. That's another expression of fear. Whole life is nothing but fear. And most importantly, please note it, fear of fear. I will give you an example. Here is a person, for some reason, 2-3 days, he cannot sleep. And whenever he tries to fall asleep, some nightmare, some very, what you call, an object of, terrible object of, some event, some memory, something comes like that. So, that is very important. After 2-3 days, for 2-3 days, he has some cause. Here is fear, and so it is disrupting the sleep. But after 2-3 days, that first fear may be reduced, but the fear may be like yesterday, like day before yesterday, I may not be able to fall asleep. This is called fear of fear. And so many people, all of us practically, are victims of the fear of the fear. One such expression is fear of death. It's very interesting if you analyze properly. In this life, this applies to every life, I am not dead, but I don't know where am I going to do. So when I have not experienced something, why should I fear? Only fear or happiness can come only when I have experienced something. But why should I have fear of what I never experienced? So fear of future, fear of death, fear of strange people, fear of strange places, fear of changing a job, and so many fears are there. Somehow or other, these will turn into what modern psychologists call phobias. So, fear of fear. That's why man suffers doubly. That's what Ramana Maharshi told. Once somebody asked, what is the difference between human beings suffering and animals suffering? He explained beautifully. Said animals suffer, only suffer what they are subjected to, either pain or hunger or whatever. But human beings, imagination of fear of fear. They suffer doubly. Fear of suffering of suffering. Fear of suffering. Suffering fear, suffering experience is one, but fear of suffering, that is added mentally, and that's what makes human beings even more miserable. So there are all sorts of, not only rational fears, there are rational fears are there. Somebody has threatened to kill me, and somebody has issued a fatwa. This is a rational fear. But nobody has issued a fatwa, but unknown fears are there. And the catalog of these fears is immense. Even fear of dry leaves, fear of earthworms, fear of snakes, fear of strangers, fear of heights, fear of closed places, fear of darkness. These are known, well known as phobias. Man is subject. But the greatest of all fears is the loss of individuality. If I don't know who my parents are, which is my country, to which religion I belong, what job am I doing, who are my family members, all these things are aids to our personality. Our CV, if you say, I completed such and such studies, I am born of such and such parents, I practice such and such religion, and I have done this kind of job. These are the things which add up to go to our personality. But when what is called amnesia sets in, then we don't know who we are. We cannot recognize our children, our parents, anybody. If that deadly, very ferocious disease called amnesia comes, sometimes this amnesia comes strangely, even to me, when I am about to express something, a particular word, it doesn't come. Nicely it comes after the situation is over. Like some students, they know everything before entering into exams hall, etc. So, of all the fears, fear of losing individuality, not to speak of death, this is the most terrible fear. But fear is an existential condition. If fear were not there, no creature could survive for long. Fear is not only, we are talking about negative impacts, but there is a positive. It is fear which keeps us alive. It is fear which makes us moral. It is fear which makes us intellectually, aesthetically, spiritually curious, etc. So, if a person doesn't have this fear, there is no hope for his redemption. A fear which helps one to survive and lead a righteous life is a good fear. But a fear which makes life a living hell is to be gotten rid of, and as soon as possible. The opposite of fear is courage. The greatest of all courages is the courage to be. Paul Tillich, a great philosopher, I think Jewish philosopher, he has written a marvelous book called The Courage to Be. Courage to be means what? Whatever be the circumstances, human being has the opportunity, the unique opportunity which nobody else has got. What is it? The courage to be. I may be poor, I may be illiterate, I may be helpless, I may be a prisoner, I may be hanged tomorrow, but I accept everything. The courage to be is to accept. The emphasis by Zen Buddhism is to accept everything. Accept summer, accept winter, accept life, accept happiness, accept dukkha, suffering. And accept also death, because what is inevitable, what is existential, cannot be avoided. So, how do we cultivate this courage? Through reliance on God and a philosophical outlook on life. Accept the inevitable with equanimity and poise. There is a beautiful poem, "Lord, give me the strength to change what I can change." These are not the exact words, but just paraphrasing, but give me the strength to accept what cannot be changed. Every spiritual aspirant knows that whatever happens is for his good, and through every event, God is slowly leading him forward. Hindus especially think, what I get is the result of what I did. No one is to be blamed. Squarely the blame should fall upon me. Dosh karo noigoma amishvakhata shalile dube mori shama. O mother, no one should be blamed. I am responsible today for what I am going through. With my own hands, I have dug a well which is filled with virulent poison, and I am drowning with the well dug with my own hands. No one is to be blamed, O mother. So, this faith that I am the architect of my own condition, not only that, but there is someone, I have a mother, and she is not ordinary mother, she is a divine mother. She can help me, and I can overcome it, or at least I can put up with it. That faith makes a person live with courage, face life with courage and strength and happiness. Prayer and a righteous life can equip us all with strength and the courage to be. So, about this fear, there was a great Indian poet called Bhartrihari, and he has written 3 books, each comprising of one about 100 shlokas, called Shungarasataka, that is amorous, describing amorous play between man and woman, Niti Shataka on morals, beautiful book, and Vairagya Shataka, a hundred plus verses on Vairagya, dispassion. His life was also marvelous. In this Vairagya Shataka, 100 verses comprising on dispassion, here he says, in this world, if anybody expects fearlessness, then he is a fool. Is there absolutely no condition, no state called fearlessness? Yes, there is only one. But what are the verse, how does the verse go? Boge roga bhayam, kule chuti bhayam, vitte ripalad bhayam, mane dainya bhayam, bale ripu bhayam, rupe jaraya bhayam, shastre vadi bhayam, gune khala bhayam, kaye kritantad bhayam, sarvam vastu bhayanvitam bhuvi, nirnam vairagyameva abhayam. Vairagya Shatakam, shloka number 31. This is the gist. In enjoyment, there is fear of disease. If one is having family reputation, there is fear of deviating, falling. In wealth, there is fear of kings as well as thieves, robbers, and in brackets I should say, relatives. In prestige, there is fear of humiliation. In power, there is fear of enemy or adversary. In beauty, there is fear of old age. In scriptural erudition, there is fear of learned opponents. In virtue, there is fear of wicked, vilifying person. In body, there is always fear of death. For human beings, everything in this world is coupled with fear. Vairagya, dispossessiveness, dispassion, not clinging to anything in this world, alone bestows fearlessness. What a beautiful thing. I have given sufficient commentary on this fearlessness. I will give you a few examples. Sri Ramakrishna, even when he was an adolescent, small boy actually, 9 to 10 years old, he used to roam fearlessly all the crematoriums, and superhuman things used to happen there. Sometimes he would not return home even until late at night. So his brother used to come there, "Oh Gadai, where are you? And he used, Gada used to, brother, elder brother, do not come anywhere near. There are spirits here who will harm you. But Ramakrishna used to see the spirits, that sometimes when he offered a pot of rice, midday the pot will disappear, as if somebody had taken it and made it disappear. He was absolutely fearless. Even when he came to Dakshineswar, the Panchavati was a very fearful place. Even a person like Hriday dared not go anywhere near it. Even daytime, some Sharadananda says, people fear to enter into it. But Sri Ramakrishna used to go after night, and remember, there was no electric lights, there was no other lights, pitch darkness. He would go deep into the jungle, lest anybody should disturb him. And fearlessly, he used to sit and meditate there practically whole night. There was a curious incident. Once his guru Totapuri came there, and he spread his seat under the Panchavati, under the banyan tree. Only if it is raining, he will go and sleep under a shelter. But otherwise, day and night, he used to sit there, lighting up fire. God alone knows how many mosquitoes, how many scorpions, how many insects would have harmed him. I don't know. Anyway, one night he was meditating. He used to get up at midnight and make the fire bright and then sit for meditation until people start coming for whatever purpose. One day, he had a strange experience. Next morning, when Sri Ramakrishna came to visit him, he narrated it. Yesterday night, I saw a Bhairava. Bhairava means a demigod employed by Shiva and Divine Mother. And what happened? Suddenly, this demigod, pure white shadowy figure, a tall white figure, descended from the topmost branch of the banyan tree and descended right where this Totapuri was meditating. And Totapuri looked at him and asked him, "Who the hell are you?" Sorry, that word is invented by me. "Who are you?" And the Bhairava smiled and said, "I am Bhairava. The Divine Mother had kept me here to protect this place." And then Totapuri looked at him and said, "You are also Brahman. I am also Brahman. Sit and meditate." As soon as this word meditation came, immediately the Bhairava disappeared. Even demigods also fear meditation. What to speak of people like us. So, Sri Ramakrishna was absolutely fearless. What about Swami Vivekananda? There was a beautiful incident. We all know about it. I am just going to remind. Once Swami Vivekananda came to Varanasi, he visited the Durga temple. And in those days, few people used to visit. And one day he was, after paying his pranams to the Divine Mother, he was returning back, and it was a lonely place. Suddenly, huge broods of monkeys started chasing him. And Swamiji was frightened, and he was running. Then an old sannyasi appeared to him, going towards the temple, and said, "Face the brute." And Swamiji liked that. He used to quote later on. And then he faced the brutes. And as soon as the brutes understood that this man is fearless, they all ran away. And this became a famous dictum of Swamiji: be fearless. Anyway, there is a beautiful incident in the life, in the one of the greatest Upanishads, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, where Yajnivalkya taught Janaka about the knowledge of Brahman, and Janaka grasped it, realized it, and Yajnavalkya gives a title, a certificate. Abhayam vai praptosi Janaka. Oh Janaka, you have attained fearlessness. Why? Because the philosophical background is bhayadvai, dvitiyadvai bhayam bhavati. Fear always stems from second. It may be an enemy, maybe another person, it may be an animal, it may be an insect, it may be wealth, it may be house, where there is a second object, second, then only fear comes, it might do harm, I might lose it, whatever way. But where there is one, there cannot be any source, because there is no source of one doesn't fear one's own self. So, that is why even Brahma, the creator, was supposed to have become fearful. He said, I am alone, and he became afraid. What is the way? Then I must create. Then I will be in the company of the many. Then he realized, Are, why am I fearing? I am only one. Where is the cause? There is no source, cause of fear. Viti advai bhayam bhavati. When Yajnavalkya understood, Janaka realized, I am the one. Even the description one is our invention. That state cannot be described. And Yajnavalkya understood, because he was also a realized soul, said, O Janaka, thou hast attained to fearlessness. Means, not freedom from a negative quality, but absolute ananda, bliss. You have become one with bliss. Fearlessness means bliss. So, a spiritual aspirant becomes completely fearless. That means completely blissful. Everything contributes to his happiness, and we will have to slowly cultivate it, whatever be the circumstances, people, etc. That is the very first quality. Then what is the next quality? Sattva samshuddhi. Sattva means heart, mind, thoughts. Samshuddhi means purity. So, purity of mind. Again, Shankaracharya, he says, Sattva samshuddhi, sattvasya antahkaranasya samshuddhi. What is the meaning of sattva samshuddhi? Purity of the antahkarana. Antahkarana means what? A mind. So, what does it really mean? Sam vyavahareshu para para vanchana maya anrutadi parivarjanam shuddha sattva bhavena vyavahara ityartha. That is thoughts and behavior. Mentally avoiding fraud, trickery, falsehood, etc. in dealings with the whole world. That is honest behavior. So, this is called sattva samshuddhi, purity. Jesus Christ's greatest teachings in the Sermon on the Mount. What is the very first thing? Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Ramakrishna also said, a pure mind and the pure Atman is exactly one and the same. And this was what Patanjali was referring to. Yogaha chitta vritti nirodaha. Yoga is purity of the mind. What does purity mean? Devoid of any unreal thoughts. Like a clean mirror, when we stand, anyone stands in front of it, if it is a clean mirror, freed from dirt, etc., it reflects exactly what is in front of him. So here, when what is it that obscures our true nature? All thoughts, even good thoughts, even Brahmakara vritti, thought of God, is an obscuration. So we have to get rid of it, all the thoughts. When the mind is free from all thoughts, tada drashtu swarupe avasthanam. Man understands, looks at him, his reflection in the mirror of his heart. Oh, I am Brahman, I am Purusha, I am Atman. I have nothing to do with this body-mind nature. That is what is called Prakriti. And that is what is called purity. Purity is an essential condition of spiritual life. Purity is the very bedrock of spirituality. Without it, none can advance in the spiritual path. It's impurity which alone obstructs our vision of God. And impurity arises from ignorance. Ignorance gives rise to egotism. Egotism gives rise to attachment and likes and dislikes, raga and dvesha. And the third, it is the ignorance which leads us to intense clinging to life. That is why Patanjali has defined them. అవిద్యా, అస్మిత, రాగ, ద్వేష అండ్ అభినివేశ. సో వాట్ ఈస్ ది ఫస్ట్ థింగ్? అవిద్య. దట్ ఈస్ ది మదర్, దట్ ఈస్ ది రూట్ కాజ్. వాట్ డస్ ఇట్ గివ్ రైజ్ టు? అస్మిత, ఎగోటిజం. వాట్ ఈస్ ఎగోటిజం? ఐఎమ్ నాట్ యూ, ఐఎమ్ నాట్ ఎనీథింగ్ ఎల్స్, ఐఎమ్ దిస్ లిమిటెడ్ బాడీ అండ్ మైండ్. అండ్ దెన్ దీస్ బాడీ అండ్ మైండ్ కాంప్లెక్స్, వాట్ డస్ ఇట్ లీడ్ టు? రాగ అండ్ ద్వేష. సర్టెన్ థింగ్స్, సర్టెన్ ఎక్స్పీరియన్సెస్ ఐ లైక్ బికాస్ దే కంట్రిబ్యూట్ వాట్ ఐ కాల్ మై హ్యాపీనెస్, వాట్ ఐ థింక్ మై హ్యాపీనెస్. అండ్ సర్టెన్ థింగ్స్ దే, ఈవెన్ దో దే ఆర్ గుడ్ బట్ ఐ డు నాట్ లైక్ దెమ్, ఐ డెవలప్ ఏ కైండ్ ఆఫ్ డిస్లైక్ టు దెమ్, ద్వేష, ఈవెన్ హేట్రెడ్, ఇంటెన్స్ హేట్రెడ్. సో లైఫ్ ఈజ్ నథింగ్ బట్ రాగ ద్వేష. అండ్ దిస్ రాగ అండ్ ద్వేష, వాట్ ఈజ్ ఇట్? We are running after what we think are conducive to our happiness. We are trying to run away from what we consider to be the opposite, that is, which contributes to our intense unhappiness. I need not insert the word intense. Even the slightest unhappiness we cannot bear. And the slightest happiness attracts us, because there are degrees of happiness broadly divided into five categories. That is, the sense happiness we derive from sense objects, from ideas, intellectual understanding, intellectual knowledge, aesthetic sense, then moral knowledge, moral behavior, and ultimately spiritual realization. These are infinite varieties, almost infinite varieties, in within each one of these categories again. So impurity arises from ignorance, ignorance gives rise to egotism, egotism gives rise to likes and dislikes, and abhinivesha, intense attachment to body, because whatever experiences we derive, they stem only through the instrumentality of the body. First comes body, then comes mind. What happens? We forget our real nature and identify ourselves with non-self, body and mind, and then go on being born again and again. We fall into this so seemingly endless wheel of transmigration. So this is what happens. What is purity? That which dispels delusion and reveals our real nature to us is purity. Purity must manifest in thought, speech and deeds. As we go on practicing spiritual disciplines, our mind becomes pure, sattvic, another word, and like a clean mirror starts reflecting the divine, which is our own true nature. This reflection of the divine further intensifies our longing for God realization. As the mind becomes purer, it makes us aware of impure thoughts, desires, motives, etc., and also shows us the way out. That's why Jesus said, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Then Ramakrishna had a disciple called Niranjan, and I think tomorrow is his birthday. This Swami Niranjanandaji is the very word, his name. Anjana means stain, a dirty spot. Niranjana means one who is completely free. Sri Ramakrishna loved him very much because he immediately perceived, and he used to say, my Niranjan is without any anjan. My Niranjana doesn't have even the smallest spot of stain or impurity in him. That is what Christ said, blessed are the pure in heart. Then we come to the third spiritual quality of the 26, Jnana Yoga Vyavasthitihi. That is complete abidance in knowledge and practice. So Vyavasthitihi means abidance. That means a person, a spiritual aspirant, must be about only trying to understand what is true knowledge, what is spiritual life, what qualities a spiritual person must acquire, without which he will never be able to progress in spiritual life, and what are the qualities which he should avoid. Both are necessary. These are demonic qualities and these are divine qualities. One must be aware of both of them. Discrimination is not possible if we have knowledge of only one side of things. If, for example, you have seen only one type of sweet and from one shop, you will never know whether it is a good sweet or bad sweet. But if there are 10 shops, sweetmeat shops, and there are 10 different varieties of sweets, then you have knowledge by tasting. Then you develop, oh, that sweet is most marvelous sweet, first class, second class, third class. That means what? First preference, second preference, last preference, etc., etc. So, jnana, knowledge about God, knowledge about myself, knowledge about what my mind really wants, knowledge about what I want to achieve, knowledge about what is the right path. This was what in philosophy, tattvam, purushartha and hita. One must be very clear about it. My Gurudev often used to say, there should be no cobwebs in the mind. As per what is my goal and where I am and what is the way to move forward. This is what he was talking about, tattva, purushartha and hita. So here jnana, and then jnana is knowledge. Knowledge is fine, but if somebody doesn't do anything about it, it's completely useless. Not only useless, it may even breed egotism, pride, arrogance, etc., etc. is possible. So here, again Shankaracharya says, so what is this steadfastness, that is abiding in right knowledge and in the practice of what the knowledge really indicates. What does Shankaracharya say? Jnanam shastrataha acharyatascha atmadi padarthanam avagamaha. Avagamaha means right understanding of what? Jnana means acquiring knowledge of such subjects as what is the self, and how do we know this about the self, about God, about afterlife, about after worlds, other worlds, etc. must be learned only from scriptures and right teachers. So that is called right knowledge, because this knowledge beyond our sensory knowledge is not available through any book on science or art, etc. It is available only through what we call scriptures, Vedas. The Vedas of Christians is Bible. The Veda of Muslims, Islam, is Quran. It's the Bible of Buddhists is called Tripitaka, etc. So these are the expressions of the realized souls, though they know what they are talking about, and that's why it is absolute truth. Since we do not know, we cannot even intellectually deduct what they are talking about. We will have to have faith. But faith in what? Faith in the scriptures comes only by seeing a person who is practicing it with thought, word and deed. The moment we see such a person, we call him an authentic person. And when this person exhibits characters like that, so much of joy, so much of love, so much of unselfishness and so much of self-sacrifice, we know that all that he has been practicing is yielding results. If he can reach that state of happiness, anybody who follows his footsteps can also reach. So our faith directly doesn't come from the scriptures, but it is dependent upon the persons who about whom we know. For example, we have faith in our gurus had faith in their gurus, had seen Sri Ramakrishna and they witnessed, they themselves experienced. So what they say, initially we have to have faith, but faith according to Hinduism should never be kept as faith, but it must be translated into fact, realization, must be converted into realization. That is very important. So here, what does Shankaracharya say? First he says, acquire knowledge. How? So from these scriptures. But to understand the scriptures, we need the right type of interpreters who are called Sadgurus. And then, avagatanam indriyadi upasamharena ekagrataya svatma samvedyata apadanam yoga. What is yoga? Yoga is making those things that have been learnt as matters of one's own personal experience by practicing concentration and by means of withdrawal of the organs, etc. And this is called yoga. What is yoga? Practical expression of what we know to be true through faith, through the understanding that comes to us from the gurus, and the gurus teach nothing but the scriptures and aided by their own experience. Tayoho gnana yoga yoho vyavasthiti vyavasthanam tannishtata. Persistence, steadfastness, absolutely abiding in both these, the right knowledge and the practice of the right knowledge, never deviating from it. In those two, we know what we have to do and we do it. Through doing it, our faith becomes even more strong, and through doing, that's called yoga, we get certain experiences, and we know that if we have one such experience, that everything that has been taught to us by our teachers is absolute truth, and this is called Jnana Yoga Vyavasthiti. Never again such a person, he doesn't deviate from it. And Swami Vivekananda used to put it in a funny way, in a jocular way, and used to say to his brother disciples often, which helped the brother disciples many times, because many people can get a little bit what we call disturbed, because the result is not coming even after practicing for a long time, etc. So Swami Vivekananda used to say, if I don't get Shyama, should I go on to devoting my time to Bhama? That means what? If I don't have spiritual experience, does it mean I have to devote myself to worldly objects? No. Once I have diverted my mind, decided I will practice spiritual disciplines, I am not going to give them up. This steadfastness, even if I do not get any result, not only in this life, but in many lives, I am not going to give it up. I am going to give you two examples. One is a parable of Sri Ramakrishna. Another is what is popularly known as what Buddha said. You know, Lord Buddha, Siddhartha Gautama was his name, and he has been trying for 6 years the most severe austerities that very few human beings could do, he has gone through, but he had not attained that illumination. So his willpower reached the penultimate state. It's, he said, I am not going to give it up. I am going to sit, and I am not going to move from this seat until illumination comes or the body falls away. So, ihasane sushyatume sariram tvagastimamsam pralayanchayatu aprapya bodhim bahukalpa durlabham naiva asanat kayam atah chalishyate. So, this body, let it die, let the flesh dry up, let the bones become powdery without attaining that illumination, which is so very difficult to attain even in so many thousands of years, yugas. This body, I am not going to allow this body to move even a millimeter from this seat. And it is said that very night, Buddha had that illumination. So, esha pradhana daivi sattviki sampat. And according to Shankaracharya, he concludes the commentary on this particular quality called jnana yoga vyavasthiti. And both these combined is the third one. First is fearlessness. Then second is the purity of the heart, is sattva guna, and development of sattva guna. And the third is jnana yoga vyavasthiti. He says, esha, this third quality, pradhana, the most important, daivi sattviki sampat, among the divine treasures, this takes agrasthana, the first place. This is the principal divine characteristic, which is sattvika, born of the sattva quality. Yatra yesham adhikritanam ya prakrutihi sambhavati sattviki sa uchyate. That nature, which may occur in persons competent in their respective spheres, that is said to be their sattvic attribute. Whatever be the path a spiritual aspirant follows, according to their varied natures, but this non-deviation from the what he and the person understands and from the practice, even if it takes billions of lives, then it is, that person is not going to deviate from it. This is called jnana yoga vyavasthiti. So what was the parable? We all know, Sri Ramakrishna narrated the parable of two yogis. They were sitting under two trees and meditating. And one day Narada happened to pass by. And these two yogis had not attained illumination. So they asked Narada, "Where are you going?" I'm going to God. Ask him when he is going to bestow his grace and his vision upon us. He said, yes. He went. After some days he came back, and the first yogi who was meditating, he asked, what did God answer? And Narada replied, "You will have to be reborn once more, then God will appear before you." And the yogi became despondent and depressed. "Oh my God, I spent so many years and one more birth, I will not be able to do it." That is the meaning. That means, I am not happy in thinking of God. It is, spiritual life is a burden, something. Somehow I have put up. I thought I will get something. I will not be able to do it any longer. And Narada said, bye. And then went to the second yogi. And the answer given was, you see, the tree that is called the tamarind tree, the leaves of the tamarind tree are very few. So Narada said, as many leaves are there on this tree under which you are meditating, so many times if you are born, then God, at the end of it, God may bestow his vision upon you. Hearing this, the yogi got up and started dancing. What? So quickly, God is going to appear to me. How gracious he is. What is the meaning? For this second yogi, spiritual practice is a joy from one step to the other step. And therefore, he could say, when I am very happy, very joyful, time will disappear, space will disappear, causation will disappear. I don't mind whether it will take a few billion lives, 100 trillion lives, because in joy you don't count time. And God is so gracious, full of hope, full of he is never going to give up. That is called jnana yoga vyavasthitihi. These are beautiful ideas, and some more points are there to be clarified about this jnanam, what Sri Ramakrishna says, etc. We will talk about it tomorrow. Om Vasudeva Sutam Devam Kamsachanora Mardhanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishnam Vande Jagatgurum. May the Ramakrishna, Holy Mother, and Swami Vivekananda bless us all with bhakti. Jai Ramakrishna.